If you wanted to learn about Aruba, the small Caribbean island nation that sits just north of Venezuela, you'd probably be surprised by how much information is out there. On one centralized website, you can scroll through basically every piece of the country's history.
So really old books, really old newspapers, you know, there have been printed newspapers on the island for like 300 years. There's also a really great collection of vintage postcards that I've sort of screenshotted as like, they just have good vibes.
That's Kate Nibbs, a senior writer at Wired. She recently wrote about Aruba's efforts to digitize their archives.
It's just a very sort of sprawling collection. I think there's actually as many documents in the Aruba collection as there are people who live in Aruba, which is cool.
You can look up pretty much any document or artifact from the year 1499 to the present. There's your standard books and newspaper articles, plus images from the country's archaeology museum, even videos, like one we kept watching, of what looked like a pretty rockin' carnival from 1980.
I really want to go to Aruba now. It's a very effective guerrilla tourism campaign, really.
You wouldn't think a library would be the thing that lures you to the Caribbean, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a tourism campaign aimed at dorks, but I'm hooked.
This database of hundreds of years of history exists online because of a partnership with a small nonprofit called the Internet Archive. They worked with Aruba to digitize just about every historical document the island had. I mean, is this typical that a small country like Aruba has, you know, a comprehensive digital history available all over the world online?
No, and that was one of the reasons why I wanted to write about the partnership that they struck with the Internet Archive, because I think it provides a really great blueprint for smaller nations and just smaller cultural institutions to get all of their work hosted and archived on the Internet, because it's like a really resource-intensive process. And like, if you're not the US or Germany or like this big sprawling country, you might just not have the resources to do it yourself.
But the project also raises questions about longevity.
Because yes, that is great. But then I worry about, you know, the Internet Archive is actually a very sustainable nonprofit. Like, there's no real worries about how it's run, except that it's currently facing several existentially threatening legal challenges. And so they could get sued out of existence.
Today on the show, the Internet Archive just created a digital library documenting Aruba's entire history. But what happens to that history if the small nonprofit who helped preserve it goes belly up? I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about tech, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around. What exactly is the Internet Archive? Why was it founded? What have they done in the past?
So the Internet Archive has been around since the mid-90s, and it was founded by a man named Brewster Kahle, and he is really been in the sort of San Francisco information must be free scene for decades. He's very much like a pioneer of putting stuff online. And it was one of the biggest and earliest digital libraries. So it exists to archive our digital world. It also exists to archive things from our physical world so that they are discoverable online, which means, you know, old physical books, old records, old films. They will make sure those are accessible to people on the internet. And it is honestly kind of shockingly central and vital to history on the internet right now in a way that amazes me and sometimes worries me.
So you're talking about, I think, the Wayback Machine, which you can look up a website from like 1997 or 2015, which seems increasingly necessary because a lot of these sites now are going out of business and coming down off the internet. But thanks to these guys, you can go and find most web pages from history?
Yeah, it's really incredible. And as a journalist who covers internet culture and digital media, I am so grateful that it exists because you can look at the evolution of a website, see if things have changed. You know, there have been so many cases where journalists have been able to use the Wayback Machine like as a reporting tool.
So how did the project in Aruba come to be?
That is a very sweet and serendipitous story. There was a woman, Stacey Argandizo. She worked at the Internet Archive for 13 years, and her family had a timeshare in Aruba, though, that they would go to every year. And honestly, this is like the first time I've ever heard of a timeshare like bringing about something positive in the world. So she loved Aruba. She would go there all the time. And then she started thinking about what they were doing to archive their, you know, treasures, in part because she worked for the Internet Archive. She contacted their National Library and their National Archives and sort of hit it off with this great man named Peter Scholling, who's in charge of the National Library. And they got to talking. And yeah, it's very much a tale of like woman walks into Aruba's National Library and walks out with a plan to help digitize it.
Amazing. And why was this appealing to Aruba, like in particular?
So initially when I started reporting the story, I sort of assumed like Caribbean island hurricanes, but actually Aruba is not in the path of most hurricanes in the way that other islands are. So it's not really as hurricane centric as I thought, but they are concerned obviously about like physical degradation of physical books and artifacts that they have. Also, you know, because Aruba has a very complicated colonial legacy, it was colonized by the Spanish and then the Dutch, a lot of its artifacts are spread out all over the place. It was sort of going to be really hard for Aruba to get it all done on its own. So this was a great opportunity to partner with a nonprofit that had more resources. They were going to Spain, to the Netherlands, the U.S., to Venezuela. There was quite a few to neighboring islands as well. It was a whole process.
How did it work, like on a practical level, to digitize the library? Like, what has to happen? Do you literally have to just scan pages of books into the computer?
Yeah, it sounds like pretty labor intensive. They have these very cool looking machines. And they're like these V-shaped tabletop scanners. They can be sort of dismantled and put back together if you need to like take it on an airplane or something, but they're pretty large. And yep, you're literally just taking the objects or the books, and there's a bunch of different cameras attached to the scanner, and then you scan them one by one. I don't know how many hours it took, but I'm sure it was pretty time consuming.
Aside from the scanning and the scanners, what other resources does the Internet Archive have that made this whole Aruba thing work?
So they have a lot of different softwares that have been developed to make physical texts more easily searchable online. I didn't realize this, but apparently it's just like incredibly complex to develop this kind of tool. So the fact that the IA is able to offer it to smaller organizations is great. They do have a lot of different tools that are sort of providing like the backbone and infrastructure of the digital library to make it all like parsable for a regular person who's just clicking around.
The Internet Archives are expansive. They have tens of millions of printed materials like books and magazines. There's over 835 billion web pages on the Wayback Machine, plus videos, concert recordings, music. It's so much.
I'm always like pretty astounded by the sheer volume of stuff that they're digitizing. They have, like, in addition to the Wayback Machine, you know, during the pandemic, they created this lending library. I don't know how many books were in it, but it seemed pretty huge. They have projects digitizing old films in the public domain. They're pretty accustomed to doing big labor-intensive projects like this.
And is the project done? Are they still working on it?
No, not at all. Actually, Peter Scholling from Aruba was telling me they've gone through so much and they have this start, but he said they're maybe 10 to 20% done. And he doesn't think they'll ever be done because it's just, you know, there's more stuff getting added to the museum collections and the library. Like, it's going to be an ongoing, like, dynamic project.
Do you think the Aruba Project has inspired other countries to do this?
They're hoping so. There's already some chatter. They just had a week-long celebration in Aruba last week, and I think they invited some other Caribbean nations to join, and they're talking about, you know, making it a regional thing. So stay tuned.
When we come back, could lawsuits against the Internet Archive stop all these plans in their tracks? There's a risk to relying on one small nonprofit to be the keeper of your country's entire history. Projects like the Aruba Collection only exist if the Internet Archive exists. And Kate says litigation could potentially bankrupt the organization. Right now, it's facing two big copyright lawsuits. And the first legal challenge is from book publishers.
And what happened there was during the pandemic, the Internet Archive introduced this like emergency lending library. And they were offering like free digital copies of books to people, and the publishers had an issue with that. Suffice to say, the publishers did not agree with the Internet Archive that it was a fair use situation and sued. They won, but the IA is appealing. I don't know what's going to happen in the appeal, but if they lose, they will have to pay a fine. It won't be great for them.
There's an even bigger risk coming from the second lawsuit for music publishers.
One of the many like huge projects that the Internet Archive is doing is they are putting like old 78 records, they're digitizing them. And most of the records are in the public domain, I believe, like they're pretty old. But the record labels are alleging that it's a copyright infringement to digitize and put these 78 records up in the way that the Internet Archive is. The labels are asking for like over $400 million in damages, which is obviously a very large number for a nonprofit that employs like under 200 people. And that case is still like making its way through the court system. It's very unclear what's going to happen there. But it's alarming. And, you know, I write a lot about copyright issues in the age of AI, and I talk to a lot of rights holders, including record labels and like the Authors Guild who have sued the IA in the past. And like, I understand like the need to protect copyright holders and, you know, the need to try to help artists get paid, et cetera. But it's really hard for me not to feel great sympathy for the Internet Archive because it offers such a valuable service to people. And because I think that it's sort of an irreplaceable entity right now.
So it seems like basically this lawsuit, the record label lawsuit, because of the enormity of the damages requested, is an existential threat to the Internet Archive.
Yes, it definitely is.
Are people in Aruba worried about this?
I talked to them a lot about whether they should be, and it seems like, you know, if the Internet Archive was to lose a case like this and sort of face closure, and hopefully they won't, but it doesn't necessarily mean that like all the work that went into digitizing these artifacts would be for naught. They've already made like backup copies that are decentralized, sitting on a bunch of different servers, so they would have to find a new place to host the digitized Aruba collection, but it's not like the digital copies would all of a sudden vanish. It would more be sad for continuing the project. It would interrupt the ongoing effort to continue digitizing their artifacts, and then it would obviously also make it harder for other countries that wanted to follow in its footsteps do so. They would have to find another host.
Do you think a project like this, I mean, it has the potential to change the way we remember history, like any library does, I guess. Is there a downside to remembering history digitally as opposed to, you know, having the physical objects in a library? Do we lose something when we can't look at the microfiche?
I think it's fantastic to have a digital library, but I say that as someone who is totally a physical book girl. Like, I I think I threw my Kindle in the garbage. I know that's not very eco-friendly, but like I hate ebooks. I always prefer to have a physical copy. I do think that there is something really valuable. Like I hope we never get rid of the microfiche or get rid of the physical books, but I think it's incredibly helpful, especially for people who are in remote locations or even people who aren't in remote locations but like can't get out to the library, to have this option. Like, I think it's very democratizing to have a digital library.
And so is it also like cool and democratizing to have all this world history, you know, in the hands of like this small nonprofit in San Francisco operating out of an old church? Like, is that cool or is that kind of a little risky?
I think it's cool, but I also think it's risky because like, I think it's cool because the Internet Archive has been proven to be such a good steward of these kind of materials. But I think we just kind of got lucky that that's the case. Like, it's definitely wild to me that this is how we've ended up, that all of our digital history is like entrusted to these groovy people in a church in San Francisco. And I think it's an open question over whether like the benefits outweigh the risks. I talked to this historian, Ian Milligan, who's actually writing a book about the history of the Internet Archive. And when I was asking him, like, if he was worried about the Internet Archive being sued out of existence, you know, he was really stressing, you know, it's a really sustainable organization. They have a lot of really ardent supporters in Silicon Valley. But, you know, if they were unable to keep going, It is an issue, and it's something that he thinks people should be thinking about more broadly about like the entire internet. Like, are we prepared for what's going to happen 50 to 100 years from now with web hosting, making sure that companies that go out of business don't lose all of their internet history? Like, it's a lot of responsibility that isn't entirely being assigned correctly right now. Like, I don't know what's going to happen to the internet of 2024 in 2054, because I don't think people are like thinking about what it's going to take to preserve it as much as we need to be.
It's kind of crazy to me that the Internet Archive's existence is in jeopardy now, because what it's doing seems so basic compared to what these AI companies are doing right now, hoovering up data from, we don't even know from where, you know, the AI companies are taking data from. I mean, it's not even known what they're doing. And it seems like, I don't want to be biased, but it seems like they should leave the Internet Archive alone and deal with what seems to be a more existential threat to copyright, you know, across the board.
Yeah, I've been writing a lot about the copyright issues that are happening in the AI space right now. And one thing that has been concerning me is I am worried that institutions like the Internet Archive are going to get sort of swept up in the like anti-web scraping movement. Mm. I've spoken to so many artists and writers who I think make great and extremely valid points about how unethical it is for AI companies to use their data without their permission and to scrape it. But I'm worried because the Internet Archive, especially the Wayback Machine, relies on crawling the internet, and they're not asking permission from every single website. Can I crawl you and take a snapshot and put it online? I'm worried that they're going to be collateral damage in this great fight over data in AI.
Kate, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Kate Nibbs is a senior writer at Wired. And that's it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell, Anna Phillips, and Patrick Fort. Our show is edited by Paige Osborne. Alicia Montgomery is Vice President of Audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. If you're a fan of the show, I have a request for you. Become a Slate Plus member. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. We'll be back next week with more episodes. I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you can catch me over on Slate Money every Saturday. Thanks for listening.